FS Insider, a premium edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. Today's host is Senior Editor Chris Sheridan.
Most of your attempts to persuade are doomed to fail because the brains of your audience automatically reject messages that disrupt their attention. That is the opening line on The Persuasion Code, how neuromarketing can help you persuade anyone, anywhere, anytime. And we are joined today by Patrick Renvoisset, the co-author of this book, also the chief neuromarketing officer at SalesBrain. And Patrick, I want to note, you actually wrote the first book on neuromarketing. I believe it was titled Neuromarketing about 16, 17 years ago. So you've been doing this for quite a long time.
Yes. Good morning, Chris. And thank you for having me on your show. Indeed, we co-authored the very first book on neuromarketing. And to my knowledge, there are about 100 books that have been written in the last 15 years. So this is a new science, but it's exploding. And I'm really excited now to release our second book on the topic.
Well, before we launch into how the brain works and some of the tricks of getting to that buy button, let's talk about what neuromarketing is. What's the definition? How does it work?
So this is an interesting question because you probably will get different answers to that question depending on who you ask. But my definition of neuromarketing is the following. Neuromarketing is the science of human decision, and it's about using various physiological measurements that are applied directly on the body of people to figure out exactly what they want. So here's what happens, right? Traditional marketing is about asking the consumer, what do you want? And then based on the self-reported answers of those people, you will build a product, and later you will create a strategy to sell that product. The problem is when you do it that way, when people give you a self-reported idea of what they want, and the issue is people don't really know what they want. So this is why traditional marketing is not that effective. The promise of neuromarketing, however, is that by asking people what do you want, but not trusting what they say, instead by measuring directly on their body various physiological changes, we will get a much better idea of what they truly want. So in neuromarketing, we use different modalities to make these measurements. For example, we measure the emotion that people display on their face based on how they contract the 43 muscles on their faces. We also measure the changes of skin resistance. Why? Because if you get excited, it will change the resistance of your skin. We also measure how they modulate their voices. So all these modalities give us a much better picture of what people truly want. And that is the promise of neuromarketing.
Okay. So, I mean, when you think about, like you said earlier, self-reporting, you know, you send in a survey. This is how we think about traditional marketing research, right? So you send out a survey, or maybe you have a focus group and you ask them, hey, how did you respond to this? Did you like it? Did you not like it? And then you see what the results are. That's all at the conscious level for the most part. But what you're digging into is all the stuff that's taking place at the biological level, right? It's pre-conscious, yes. It's subconscious.
Exactly. Here is what happens. A typical human brain processes about 11 million bits of information per second. So that's a huge number. However, you can be conscious of only about 50 bits per second. And that's, you know, I mean, we've seen this iceberg 1,000 times and you've heard that. You know, over 80% of who we are is unconscious. And one of the promise of neuromarketing is that doing these measurements directly on the body of people, we will be able to access some of the hidden stuff. So if you think that those 50 bits of information that you're conscious about is the tip of the iceberg, the promise of neuromarketing is that we will be able to understand what's happening with the rest of the 11 million bits that are down below. Now, there is a number of researchers, including Daniel Kahneman, who won the Nobel Prize in Economy in 2002, and even more recently, another guy by the name of Richard Teller, who won the Nobel Prize in 2017, and Teller was a student of Kahneman, and they talk about two systems in the brain. They talk about system one and system two. And system two is that neocortex. It's the tip of the iceberg, if you want. It's the conscious us. It's the smart us. It's the brain that makes us uniquely human. In fact, that's the brain that, you know, gave our name to our species, Homo sapiens. And then you have system one, which is the primal brain. It's the brain that is much more, you know, towards the inside of the brain. And it's really the brain of the unconscious. And the puzzling discovery that those researchers have made is that system one, our primal brain, has a greater impact on all the decisions that we make than the conscious brain. So the thing that we have done in, you know, in our first book, we started to do it, and we've done it even more precisely in our second book now. We've decoded how that system one, that unconscious brain, works. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the promise of neuromarketing is to access that system one. And what we have done in our book, and to my knowledge, this is the only book that does this, we have come up with a predictive model of what it takes to reach that brain and how that brain works.
Okay, I've got to share something because this ties into my direct, almost everyday experience, or at least a weekly experience. If I go to the grocery store, right, and I'm going through the cereal aisle and I'm trying to figure out which box of cereal or whatever good it is to buy in it, and I start using my rational brain to compare pricing and how much you're paying per gram, for example, where the discounts are, pretty soon, it's like I'm just overwhelmed by too much information, trying to use my rational brain to figure it out. And what ends up happening is I just end up saying, forget it. And then I just grab whatever one it is. So what you're telling me is, you know, we try to use our rational brain, but ultimately we end up using our primal brain for the decision or that buy button that's in our brain.
Yes, exactly. And that particular box of cereal that you will pick up, which you think you're going to be picking up almost randomly because you're sick and tired of thinking about, you know, the price per ounce, etc. The reason why you might pick that particular box is because maybe there is the face of a lady on that box, and the face of that lady reminds you of your grandmother.
Right.
And you're completely unaware of it.
Yeah. Or it could be just the color red or something like
that. Exactly.
Okay. So basically through your work, and you've been doing this now for, you know, nearly two decades, right? You're looking at, again, facial coding, you're looking at eye tracking, you're looking at voice analysis, skin conductance, EEGs and MRIs, and you're taking all this information. And I mean, what are you doing? You're putting people in a chair and performing like these MRI experiments as you ask them questions. How does that work? What is it you're drawing out from that?
Yes. So you're absolutely right. When we can access the consumers, we submit those consumers to various kinds of stimuli, and then we deduct what they are really interested in. So again, we've done that for many, many years now. At the beginning, the technology was very expensive. It was very complicated. But because the whole field of neuromarketing is exploding now, some of these techniques are becoming, you know, very easy to put in place. In fact, you know, one of the oldest techniques is called eye tracking. And now eye tracking is so effective that you don't even need to do the tracking on actual people. In other words, there are solutions that give us access to what's called predictive eye tracking. And because humans are so predictable, the accuracy of predicting eye tracking gives you 80% of what you would get if you were going to use actual humans to, you know, track an image.
Wow.
So, you know, eye tracking is an example. There is another technique which has been used for a while, which is called the implicit association test. And now there are solutions to do implicit association tests, which are almost free. So again, these techniques are becoming very prevalent. The hardware, the software, all the tools are now available. And this is making these studies much cheaper and much faster.
Okay. And so you've taken this and you've developed what you call a neuro map, right? So this is decoding persuasion down to, I mean, a series of steps on how to be effective in your marketing or in whatever it is you're doing. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yes. So, you know, as we were doing all this research, we felt that it would be very helpful if people, instead of having to pay quite a bit of money for all these studies, if they were using a predictive model of what their customers do with their brain when they make a decision. So again, the whole idea is that we know for sure now that that unconscious brain, what is called system one, we also call it the primal brain. Sometimes people call it the reptilian brain. It has many different names. But we know that that unconscious brain drives our behavior much more predictably than the rational brain. So what we've studied is we've studied all these cognitive biases that we have, which are driven by our unconscious. In fact, today the list is very long. To my knowledge, there is 188 registered known cognitive biases. Wow. And they come from the fact that we don't use our smart brain. We use our primitive brain to make these decisions. Now, most people that are in sales and marketing, you know, dealing with the list of 188, it's very complicated. So what we've done is we've narrowed it down to six stimuli. In other words, these 188 rules of how irrational we are can be summarized in six rules of what we call stimulus. So these six stimulus are, well, that primal brain is self-centered or personal. In other words, if you want to reach people, you cannot talk about you have to talk about them. So that's reptilian brain, that primal brain is selfish. The second stimulus is, it's a brain that can only be triggered with contrasted information. In other words, the notion of really of contrast is super important if you want your customers to be defocusing on what they are thinking about now and focusing on your message, right? I mean, the idea is if you're driving in the night and all of a sudden there is a flash of light on the right-hand side, automatically as a reflex function, and that's due to the biology of how the brain works, you know, that's due to the biology of neurons, automatically your brain will tell you, look towards the flashing light. So the notion of contrast is really important. That's the second stimulus. The third stimulus is tangible. In other words, people, you know, do not understand things like an easy to use, integrated, scalable, modular architecture, all these intangible concepts. The reptilian brain really wants tangible information to make a decision. Fourth stimulus is beginning and end. In other words, if I, you know, send you a message, your brain is wired to worry about what's happening at the beginning, what's happening at the end, but it forgets everything in between. Hmm. The fifth stimulus is visual. You know, the primal brain is not smart enough to understand words, because words in evolutionary terms only appeared about 10,000 years ago for written words, and spoken words only appeared about 40 to 50,000 years ago. So words are not tangible enough for the brain. And that's why the primal brain loves visual stimulus. And then the last stimulus is emotion, right? You know, the greatest expert on the role of emotion in the brain is a professor. His name is Antonio Damasio. He wrote a number of books on the brain, but Damasio said, we are not thinking machines that feel. We are feeling machines that think. So emotion is the basic fuel that is necessary for the brain to make decisions. So you have only six ways if you want to stimulate that primal brain, that unconscious brain. So what we have done then is we have translated those six stimuli into four steps that everybody should apply in sales and marketing if they want to have a chance to persuade or influence people.
You know, what's really fascinating to me is if we think about some of the emerging trends in technology, I mean, Apple just released their new iPhones. They all use, as far as I understand, facial recognition technology. They probably have eye tracking technology built into them. And as this becomes more commonplace with our phones and the devices that we use, there is going to be more of that subconscious aspect of our decision-making process from the primal brain, you know, that really makes marketing effective. I imagine that it's going to be starting to be built right into the technology that we're using.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, what are your thoughts on that? As technology grows and becomes more sophisticated at reading all those subconscious cues, because it's not going to be a person in your phone. It's going to be automated software and algorithms learning your behavior and trying to trick you.
Yes, absolutely. But you know, the whole thing started when we started to use emoticons in text messages. Now, think about it. When you're using text messages, it's typically very dry. There is no emotion. So people started to use these thumbs ups or smileys or whatever. Now, the next frontier of that is not only just to communicate it, but to read it from the consumer. Now, of course, there are some ethical issues here. In other words, if I am on a website and that website is reading the emotion that I'm experiencing now, like, you know, I could be on my Facebook account and I could be looking at various messages that have been posted by some of my friends. I want to know if Facebook is reading my emotion.
Right.
So there is a whole ethical part of neuromarketing which has been raised, and it's, you know, an ongoing concern. But I believe that there is a lot of positive things that can happen if your devices can read my emotional state.
Yeah. And I want to say, I mean, reading your book, it's very clear that this neuromarketing is extremely effective. And if you implement it correctly, and if you can find out all of those cues, then clearly you're going to drive decision-making in your favor. If you're a company, you're an organization with your customers, you know, so when I think about how this is being utilized and how it'll continue to be utilized, but at an automated level, you know, it'll be, instead of people on the other side, human marketers, there'll be algorithmic marketers looking at, like you said, eye tracking behavior. I mean, in the future, I don't think we're too far away from this. I've already demoed a number of different devices, but you know, many of us will probably not be looking at screens, computer screens. We'll be using Microsoft HoloLenses or some type of AR, VR device for interacting with monitors. We won't have monitors. We'll just have them digitally displayed. And then, you know, all you have to do is have a camera pointing back, looking at your eyes and seeing where they're moving. Yes. And a lot can be determined from that. So it's kind of an interesting feedback loop that I think we're developing.
Yeah, now if you think about the number of people that have issues with the call centers that, you know, they are calling, right? Imagine you have an issue with your bank and the discussion with the agent at the end of the phone is starting to turn south. I mean, wouldn't that be great if somebody at that call center could start to measure that I'm starting to get annoyed, or, you know, I'm starting to escalate the emotion that I'm experiencing so that they could do something about it. Maybe they could change, you know, the person who is at the other end of the phone. Maybe they could escalate my phone call to somebody who has a higher level of access to my information or who has higher level of authority. Mm-hmm. So if people can detect that I'm becoming really negatively emotionally engaged, then I'm happy if they do something about it.
True. Yeah. Yeah, very true. So it can be used for good and it can be used for evil, I suppose, as you said before.
Yes.
Let's talk about some of the practical examples of how neuromarketing has been used by companies to be more effective, applying, you know, SalesBrain where you work, the NeuroMap, and some of the methods that you've developed over the years.
Yes. So, I mean, you know, our clients range from small companies, startups, all the way to some of the very large companies. And we've done studies in many different fields, you know, finance, insurance, cosmetic products. And the results are very positive. In other words, whenever we work with a company, we always bring them insight that they didn't know. And that's the key. Some people create trailers for movies, or some people create small trailers of video games. Well, in the past, the only way they could test those video games or those trailers was by asking people, what did you think about that trailer? Would you want to go see the whole movie if you saw that trailer? But the correlation between those measurements and down the road, you know, really how many people would go to that movie, it was not one. I mean, it was not a perfect prediction. And we've been able to show that by using neuromarketing, that prediction is much better.
Patrick, what if those outside of marketing were to apply? I mean, is this something that just marketers can apply, or does this apply to, I don't know, teachers, parents, doctors, you name it, other occupations?
Yes. So again, you have two different things here. You have neuromarketing, which is the science of measuring on people the reaction. It's one thing. But in our book, we've also published a predictive model. And that predictive model is based on the research, but it can be applied to anything. I mean, if you think about it, a parent has to influence their kids to get healthy behavior. Right? You want to tell them, don't start drinking too early, don't play too many video games, don't do drugs. You tell your kids, you know, all these things, and you want to make sure they follow you. So you want to persuade them of the value of this. And our predictive model can be used for that. So it can be used for teachers on how to better communicate their knowledge to their students. It can be used by judges when they evaluate a case. Because unfortunately, judges, who normally should be the most rational people in the world, they also have the unconscious brain that drives our behavior. In fact, there is a whole bunch of research that have been showing that judges tend to be more lenient or more severe depending on what time of the day they have to make the rulings. So I think it's important for judges to recognize their own biases. And right now, a lot of them do not, because they are not aware of their unconscious brain. So our model can be used in all those cases. Absolutely. In fact, you know, our publisher has been suggesting that we should write neuromarketing for singles. Because when you're single and you're looking for a spouse, you are interested in influencing or persuading some other people that you would be the right partners for them. But, you know, if you're not aware of your own unconscious biases, and if your own partner is not aware of our own consciousness, you know, unconscious biases, well, at the end of the day, that leads to 50% of the people in our country having to divorce.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
It's critical to improve our lives in general, not just in sales and marketing. In fact, Chris, I'm not sure if you saw my TEDx talk, but that's, you know, the conclusion of my TEDx talk.
I did. Yeah, I did see your TEDx talk. And you said that neuromarketing is based on neurometrics, biometrics, and psychometrics. And another word for psychometrics, I believe, is psychographics, which is sort of a subset of demographics, right?
Yes.
Demographics is the who that is purchasing your product. Psychographics is the why, you know, the things that persuade them or cause them to become a customer or to buy your products. Now, psychographics has been in the news really since Facebook came. There was a scandal with Cambridge Analytica and Facebook. Can you tell us a little bit about psychographics and how that fits into this field, this growing field of neuromarketing?
So traditional marketeers, they look at the demographics of people who buy their products, right? So I might be interested to know that my product is purchased mostly by women, or that my products are going to be bought mostly by men between the age of 25 and the age of 35, or by families who's, you know, who have a revenue within $40,000 to $60,000. So this is traditional demographics. Use the information of the population that's buying your product. The next step, if you want to go at a final level, is to use psychological characteristics of your customers. In other words, it might not be that important to know that your customers are between the age of 25 and 35 than it is to know that the people that buy your product are people that are risk takers. You know, what if you could establish that the people that buy your product are people that are typically more willing to take some risks in their life, or people that are extroverts as opposed to introverts, or people that have different psychological types? Because down the road, what marketeers are trying to do there is they are trying to address messages that will appeal to some part of the population. But again, you might be a 25-year-old woman who is a risk taker, and you may have the same psychological characteristics as a 55-year-old former pilot who also likes to take risks. And what might compel you to take a decision might be the same reason. Therefore, you should be served the same message. So this is the promise of psychometrics and some of, you know, the clusterings that you need to do around your customers, not so much worrying about their demographics information, but more worrying about their psychological profile.
And again, this is something that is being heavily utilized today, not just by Facebook, but by other tech companies, and even by, you know, political campaigns, right?
So well, absolutely.
Micro-targeting and knowing what is going to persuade voters to come out. So this is, this research, this data is extremely effective, not just for marketers. I mean, really anyone can be a marketer. If you have a message that you want to sell or a product,
yes,
then this can apply to you.
By the way,
doesn't matter who you are.
Yes, absolutely. By the way, just to use a subject which is very relevant these days, you know, when we are worried about Russia interfering with our election, this is exactly what we're talking about. Because the Russians have the intelligence to do all that psychometrics, all that extraction of information, and then they have the intelligence to post those messages where it influences our votes the most effectively.
Right. So informational warfare is what that is, right?
This is exactly. And, you know, this is an interesting coincidence, but, and I'm mentioning this with you on the air, but our book is going to be published, you know, it's publishing today, right?
Correct.
We received an order from China for 5,000 copies of our book when they haven't seen the book yet. We've also signed another publisher in Russia. So the two countries that first bought our book are China and Russia. Again, I don't know if there is a coincidence, but that's a fact.
All right. So if you want to know how Russia and China may be trying to influence you through Twitter, and how you can effectively influence your own customers or to become more influential, you definitely need to buy this book. Again, the title of it is The Persuasion Code, How Neuromarketing Can Help You Persuade Anyone, Anywhere, Anytime. And we've been speaking with the co-author, Patrick Renvoisé. Patrick, it was a pleasure speaking with you on our show. I definitely want to encourage all of our listeners to buy the book, and we look forward to speaking to you again on Financial Sense NewsHour.
Chris, thank you very much. It was a pleasure as well.
So if you'd like to learn more about how the human brain works, the System 1, System 2, as Patrick spoke about, and even the primal brain versus the cortex, the rational brain, how those cooperate and compete with one another in terms of the decisions that we make, this book is chock full of not just theory and looking at, you know, I mean, the behavior of neurons and the actual anatomy of the brain and a lot of the cutting edge neuroscientific research, but also practice. I mean, Patrick goes into a lot of depth on their neuromap, on how you can use this information to really be more persuasive. Obviously, the title of the book is The Persuasion Code. So that's the goal here. You know, I like how he ended it saying that Amazingly enough, I mean, countries, militaries, you know, large tech companies, they are going full bore down this rabbit hole, trying to uncover the subconscious parts of what make us think the way we do and to influence our behavior, either in positive or negative ways. You know, this can be used for good, but it can also be used for evil. And that's what definitely we see now with the informational warfare, the propaganda. And honestly, I would say we're really just at the beginning of seeing some of these things come out because, as I noted, I mean, as we see facial tracking, eye tracking, facial recognition through our phones, through the devices that we use, through cameras that are all over the place. I mean, if you live in China, there are cameras just everywhere. They're pervasive throughout society. So as that increases, and I'm pretty sure it's going to increase, these methods become that much more effective because, you know, whether it's the all those small little neuromuscular changes that happen in your face that reveal those hidden emotions that you're having or reactions to something, whether it's not your eye tracking. Yeah, I mean, if we were to be wearing a Microsoft HoloLens or any type of other AR, VR device to watch a movie, or if we're scanning the web using one of those, and there's a camera pointed back at your eyes to track and see what you're looking at, how much time you're taking, I mean, there's going to be a ton of information that's going to be gleaned from that by marketers, by companies. And again, this is all going to be automated. It's not going to be someone on the other end of that camera looking at your eyeball. It's going to be algorithms, machine learning algorithms that are going to be uncovering, again, all those hidden signals, all those cues that you're not even aware of. As Patrick said, you know, 80% of who we are, of our decision-making process day to day, is unconscious, driven by that primal brain. So very interesting stuff. I would highly recommend reading this book. It goes to, again, a lot of really interesting cutting edge neuroscience, persuasion science, and then also some really practical examples of how you can implement that with their neuromap. So very interesting information. And again, it's not just if you're a marketer or selling a product or trying to persuade people, but this can be for everyone in all walks of life. You know, whether or not you're a teacher, a judge, a parent, if you're single, a doctor, a filmmaker, etc. And this applies to a wide range of different people across industries and the like. And again, as we noted, the book was actually just released today. That is Wednesday, September 19th. So you can buy it on Amazon. If you have any questions about what we discussed today, any feedback, please feel free to email me at cris@financialsense.com. I'm Chris Sheridan, and you're listening to FS Insider.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any company mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.